Welcome, everybody, to the Lonely TARDIS, your journey through space and Time Lords, where four incredibly happy adventurers join the Doctor in a little blue box and chat about his wonderful adventures. I'm Dolly Domofsky, and I am, as usual, a part of this amazing team that includes Marcus Beer.
Hola.
That includes Stephen Strum.
Hello.
And that actually does include Sean Norton.
You know, never mind. Hey, hello. How's it going? Good to be here tonight.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Show with you wonderful, wonderful people.
Smartasses. We love you, Sean. We love you. Glad to have you back. We've got a lot to talk about today again. I got to say our episodes have been much more action-packed since we've been playing around with our format a little bit. Definitely a lot to talk about. And stay tuned because we're going to throw out the next contest that we have here for Lonely TARDIS so you could win some neat swag. So we're going to dive in with the news. Not a lot of news this week, but as we reported last week, I don't want to say we reported, I'm giving all the credit to young Marcus Beer on breaking a little bit of news last week. And Marcus, it looks like what you told us last week is pretty true.
Hurrah.
Yeah, so there is, it revealed, I believe, over the last day or so here, today, actually, there is a 5-year business plan, at least for Doctor Who on the BBC, which for those that are wondering, the show's going to last at least 5 more years. So this is Stephen Moffat spoke to Variety and said that, here's the exact quote, "It is definitely going to last 5 more years. I've seen the business plan. It's not going anywhere. And I think we can go past that. It's television's own legend. It will just keep going." And then also what you mentioned last week was Peter Capaldi will remain as the Doctor. And again, the attention then turned, I'm reading from a blog Doctor Who here, but again, it's Variety. He says, they say, "Peter Capaldi is going nowhere." So that's essentially the definition of staying at least 1 more year. He's not going anywhere, folks. Now, what that next year could be, we don't know yet. Could it be full episodes? Could it be, you know, a few movies throughout the year or specials? We don't know. None of that has been dictated or announced, but yeah, you heard it here last week first, and now it's been reiterated everywhere. Well done, Marcus.
Reading something on the internet.
Normally we avoid doing that. But yeah, so that's good news for Capaldi fans. And I think after this season, or the way this season's going, which I'm sure we'll talk about, that's definitely good news. So that is it for news. I don't think there's anything else that bubbled up. I've kind of gone through a few of the notes in my RSS feed, and that was kind of the major one. I did want to touch on the Big Finish episode the episodes we've been listening to, Doom Coalition. I spoke extensively last week about it. Steven and Sean have gotten into it this week. And, you know, I'm curious as to what you guys think of Doom Coalition starring the Eighth Doctor. So, Steven and Sean, take it away. What are your thoughts? Who wants to go first?
It's good.
Yeah. Steven? Yeah. Yep. Back to you, Sean. It's great.
Now, Well, so I don't know about you, Steven. Yeah. I apologize. I've been traveling. I haven't had a chance to listen to your stuff from last week, but this is my first Who audiobook. So it was a little jarring, and I was listening to it on a plane, so it might have been that. But I found a couple of things a little hard to follow, some stuff that was going on either in the environment or some dialogue that was mumbled or whatever. But for the most part, I thought it was actually really cool. I thought it was a really cool Eighth Doctor story, and I found it to be a very interesting and pretty compelling introduction to a villain. And I don't want to go into too much because, A, I don't know what was already been talked about. B, I don't know if Mark.
We spoiled the crap out of it last week, so it's okay.
Oh, well, okay.
he gave the basic premise of what he gave the premise of the villain, and he gave the premise of like the second episode, which you haven't even seen yet or listened to.
Yeah,
rather.
I haven't. So I guess it's good I didn't hear that. But it was delightfully heavy at some parts. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a villain that had the potential to be on the level of a master.
We're talking about the 11, by the way.
Yes, the 11 with the potential to be on the level. But yeah, I mean, Steve, I don't know if you want to elaborate a little bit. I'm really enjoyed what I've heard so far, and in terms of audio stuff, I can see why these things are so, you know, so sought after and so highly regarded. This was really cool Doctor Who. So
yeah, it's definitely cool. I definitely like it a lot, and I just in general, I really like audio plays and stuff like that. And I'm excited to see more of those just at all. A couple of like critiques I have of it and stuff like that is you pointed out specifically that there was, you know, maybe some problems with the environment. It feels almost, and I don't know if this is, you know, if they've just built up a long continuity of things like that. But with Doctor Who, it seems like a lot of the times with the older type stories where it's a kind of a serial, you can kind of just jump into any serial story and and kind of understand what's happening and, you know, where you are and everything like that. Whereas with this, it kind of makes that same assumption, at least it did to me, of like, you know who Liv is and you know who the Doctor, you know, the Eighth Doctor is and where they are and what they've been up to and all this stuff and what their personalities are like. It just kind of assumes you know all of that stuff already. Right down to, like, especially the environment, it starts on Gallifrey and there's like kind of, and I get that they're only, you know, 50 minutes, mm-hmm. 55 minutes long or whatever. But I got the impression that, or rather, I didn't get much of an impression from, like, the environment that they were in. Like, the characters were all very well-defined and stuff like that, but, like, the grandeur of Gallifrey wasn't really well-established to me in any kind of way.
Yeah, I wonder if that's by design, to keep it contained to certain areas and stuff.
But yeah, it might be.
I agree. It was interesting to hear these things about other Time Lords and stuff, which harkens mm-hmm. back to a very different era. But to not have too much of the actual environment and surroundings elaborated on.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wonder if we would have seen, you know, had we seen some of this, that would have changed your mind. But I think, you know, Stephen, you touched on something which was interesting in that this is part of a serial, right? So you had to have, I'm assuming, you had we listened to all of the Eighth Doctor adventures, and in the audio plays, and we would be able to jump right back in, you know, and into this one, and we'd know exactly who Liv was and why they're on Gallifrey, perhaps. But I, listening to this, and apologies for bouncing head just a little bit, since I've listened to this whole four-part series, I'm way interested in going back and kind of jumping into the earlier Eighth Doctor episodes.
Yeah, I imagine that's how it would be when we all started kind of watching Who at different points too. I jumped in with Tennant, so once I was hooked, I went back and watched it. I think it was his second or third season, I think. But I went back and I watched all the Ninth Doctor stuff, and I started reading up on the Eighth and all the other stuff. And that's a good point. This is obviously the same with audio, so.
It's just a very different, like, sort of economic and time investment to kind of thing to get in. Obviously, with this, it doesn't take, like, you know, 13 hours to complete a season the way that a season of Doctor Who does. But at the same time, you're going back and you're picking and choosing and you're finding what episodes you can and you're paying the money for that, you know, for that one story. And it might be out of order from the one that you've already had and you might not know. It's not, like, as clearly delineated as it might seem to me, anyway.
Sure.
But, you know, above all the poo-pooing on the thing, like, I thought the, like, actual quality of the production itself was really, really good. Like, I can't remember what you guys just said, but I think it was you, Sean, who you just mentioned that it was, like, really kind of nasty, like, at times. And, like, I think mm-hmm. a lot of that comes through the sound effects. Like, there's a lot of, like, death in that first episode, and they make it, like, they have some nasty, loud, crunchy sound effects for, like, what to describe what is happening to these people. It's messed up a little bit.
Yes, it is.
And just the general quality of the voices. And I feel this more strongly in episode 2 than I do necessarily in episode 1, although I thought episode 1 was very strong, especially with the Eleven himself delineating between his different personalities. But in episode 2, like, the actors are very, very good at conveying, like, a general sense of, like, emotion just through their voice. You know, again, I don't want to get into too heavy into spoiler territory for you, Sean, or anything like that, but, it's just, when things go down and, you know, specific, you know, guest characters, not necessarily like the Doctor and Liv, start, like, you know, talking and stuff like that, and they have to convey, you know, how they feel about a certain scene. Like, they sound terrified, they sound angry or upset or, you know, bored with somebody. It's they do a really good job of conveying it in, you know, the even the unspoken things.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I also think it's interesting because the series kind of, like I said, it gives you this look at the Time Lords, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, well before the Time War and everything like that. But there's also hints there, which I feel like we've seen and heard in other places that even before they kind of got deep in the war and kind of lost their minds and would do anything they could to win, there's this kind of hint that they had already kind of been hypocrites.
Yeah.
Getting all their power and stuff and then using it. I don't want to go into too much detail either, but I really like the kind of world building they're doing there. Not necessarily like we were talking about with the locale or anything, but with the Time Lords themselves and the whole Gallifreyan situation.
Yeah.
I recommend it. I mean, to keep it just short and wrap it up on my perspective here, I definitely want to listen to the next three parts, and I definitely recommend if anybody is interested in the Eighth Doctor stuff that they definitely check this out.
Yeah, especially if you just started getting on like around Peter Capaldi era, around Matt Smith era, especially that sort of thing, and you want to just get an idea of like the Time War stuff. If you were really impressed with like the Jonathan Hurt vision of like the Time War and stuff like that, they do kind of there's a very specific like monologue without just reciting it word for word or anything like that. But there's a very specific monologue in it where they kind of like set up the Time Lords is this incredibly dangerous force, and it's just like, hey, like they do everything but say like, hey, if we wanted to be bad guys, we would be the best bad guys ever.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that really, like exploring that particular, very intentionally unexplored era of Doctor Who is a really, really, really fertile ground for audiobooks like this, I think, anyway. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I love this expanded universe, and it's just so rich, and there's so many different things. It's just really cool.
And it's just so different than what we're getting on Doctor Who right now. Like, maybe that's just part of it, too. Like, maybe that's why I'm just so enthralled with it right now. It's just because it's that new factor. Like, it's just, that new old factor in that it feels like kind of a very old story. It feels like, this could have been a master story or something like that. In this era where the Time Lords are still around and, characters have a very different opinion of things and very different way of handling things than they do now.
Yeah, one of the great things is that as these episodes are released, we'll be reviewing more and more of them. But, I totally agree with you, Stephen. There's something fresh about it. And it's, Sean, you mentioned it as well, that just kind of going back to that era of the how the Time Lords acted differently. Gallifrey was different than what it is now. So one more quick bit of Big Finish news. The really cool thing about Big Finish is that they are constantly releasing episodes, parts of these episodes for free. So stay, I hate saying stay glued, but keep a lookout at the Big Finish Twitter feed, which is at Big Finish, because they're always listing, hey guys, here's the first part of a four-part audio drama about Doctor Who or, whatever, for free. Go ahead and listen to it, and it gets you into it. So you get these nice hour-long episodes. It's worth it. And I just posted one in the chat, but, they're giving away right now a Peter Davison Doctor Who episode. It's called Cuddlesome. So that's for free. And they're also giving away a We Are the Daleks, which is Sylvester McCoy. So a lot of cool things that they always give these things away, and it's totally worth checking it out. So yeah, glad you guys are enjoying it so far. I'm interested to see the longer you guys listen to the further you guys go into these next few episodes of Doom Coalition, what you guys think.
Yeah, I like I said, the only thing I would really hope to see them do is kind of just establish like a more general sense of place from episode to episode. Like character stuff they nail, not so much the like general just. Cause that's something that Doctor Who, can do pretty well with, I've talked about it before, but like villain design and monster design, alien design, that sort of thing. And that's just kind of missing in a sense from the Big Finish stuff. And that's not to say that it needs to be visual for that to come through. But I think there are ways to get around that. And they do that well with handling the villains, by making a compelling villain, just by their voice. But I would like to see, if we're going to more alien worlds and stuff in future episodes, I hope that they can. I hope that that's, maybe just a fluke in that first episode.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right, well, let's move on and really get into the episode this week, which is the Zygon invasion. So, you know, before we do that, one thing we didn't get a chance to do is talk about the whole first half of the season. Do you guys want to do that really quickly right now, or wait till the end of this episode, or just wait till we do a whole season review? How would you guys want to do that?
I think it's best to wait. I mean, we're bottles at a time, and we're going to be, you know, going to have some dead air between the season finale and Christmas. So,
okay.
You know, I mean, it's one of those ones because there's only been 4 stories so far.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as if we're really getting, it's a different season, isn't it?
Just Ground has been covered very slowly, like at a much slower burn than it has been in its previous seasons.
Yep. Okay, that sounds fine. We'll wait to the end of the season, and we'll cover it that way. So, the Zygon invasion, really lovely title. Of course, this ties into it was not the finale last year, but kind of
the theater special.
The theater special. Yep. So let me just kind of go over the quick synopsis, which is the Zygons, a race of shape-shifting aliens, have been living in secret amongst us on Earth, unknown and unseen. Until now, when Osgood is kidnapped by a rogue gang of Zygons, the Doctor, Clara, and UNIT must scatter across the world in a bid to set her free. But will they reach her in time? And can they stop an uprising before it's too late? So that's the synopsis from BBC America. One thing to note is... That UNIT kind of tells you at the beginning of this episode is that, and it's done in sort of flashbacks, the Zygons, 20 million Zygons have been living among humanity, and it's a peace treaty has been signed between the Zygons and the humans to do so. So they're almost like they're letting the Zygons colonize Earth, kind of like District 9.
They're refugees.
It was a very District 9 feel to this episode, but anyways, that's the synopsis, and I want to jump in with just your general thoughts about did you like it, did you not like it, and we'll kind of take it from there. So I want to hear from Sean, because this was
let me go last.
You want to go last? Are you sure?
Then
Marcus, what were your thoughts about this episode?
I think Mr. Marcus
just as well. You didn't see the whole "be right back 1 minute" in the chat.
sorry about that. If you need to, then we'll skip you for a second.
Okay. What I would like to say is I would like to pull the age card and the longevity of watching the show card and go last, because I've got a buttload to say about this, but it's not just my perception. I've been reading a lot of reviews and a lot of feedback over the weekend. And I'm kind of pissed off about a lot of the reaction to it, and I want to twat some people. So,
I definitely don't want to go before you then.
I would say save to last, guys. I don't think I'm going to have a pop at any of you guys, but definitely save.
Well, you don't think you'll have a pop at any of us? Just wait and see. All right. Well, then Steven, you'll go. Then I'll go. Then Sean.
No, guys, I think I should really be the one to go last.
Maybe we should all just react to each other on this. I mean.
On the count of three, everybody just split it. Tell me your thoughts, Steven. I'll go after you.
I'm actually in kind of a weirder spot than some of you guys, because it's not necessarily a matter that I have a ton to say so much as it is a matter of, like, I feel like anytime that this, like, okay, let's just to get it out of the way, like, so everyone knows, I don't know if you're watching the, or if you're listening to the show and for some reason you're not, like, watching the episodes at the same time, what happened was, the episode is a huge metaphor for the war on terror, it's particularly like the United States war on terror and stuff like that, with very, like, a lot of talk of the splinter groups not necessarily representing, you know, the splinter terrorist group of Zygons not necessarily representing the entire Zygon race and all this stuff like that. The Zygons, basically, they're weird organization that I don't know if they're called Truth or Consequences, or if they're just, like, if that's just their rallying cry, or if they don't have a name. But they say Truth or Consequences, you know, throughout the episode, so I'm just going to refer to them as that. They decide to take on, like, the planet Earth, and they want to be, like, recognized as what they are, I guess, which also kind of brings this into, like, a weird, sub-metaphor for, like, LGBTQ themes and stuff like that. And, Yeah, it's a very violent episode. A lot of people getting like murked constantly, like literally by the dumpster full, as we find out in one scene. Vaporized dead hairy corpses all over. The Zygons use their shape-shifting powers to, overthrow the world and stuff like that. It's really hard to talk about the episode just for me, because again, like, this is something that I don't always necessarily feel like super comfortable talking about, because I don't feel necessarily super educated, but I can share my opinion, which is to say that,
well, you're very educated on Who. You could share your opinion as a,
yeah,
new episode.
Yeah, I mean, from that, from that very, specific angle, I appreciated that, like, this was kind of it was kind of a scary episode at times, like, except for the fact that, like, characters make a bunch of illogical choices in the very, like, that very terrible horror movie way of, like, well, let's just trust these shapeshifters that they're actually my mom and dad and stuff like that in another country.
The episode is illogical choices. The whole episode.
Yes, tons of illogical choices made throughout this episode, like, tons of but that's, to an extent, that's a horror trope. You know, it's weird, because I've been thinking about the movie The Thing, which is my favorite movie ever made, and The Thing is a great example, and it's also a horror movie with characters, or with a monster that can shapeshift and make itself appear to be anyone, so, like, seeing this episode right after that and Halloween and everything like that was kind of interesting. Because The Thing, to me, is always an example of a horror movie where everybody acts in, like, perfectly logically. Like, they do the proper logical thing to do, which is, like, you have scenes where characters just, like, okay, I know I'm human, so I'm going to tie up everybody, and then I'm going to test them all to see if they're not human, and then we're just going to blowtorch them to death the second we figure out otherwise. And shit still goes bad because the monster is just smarter and more creative than them. This is using that same trope of, like, we can't trust anyone, we have to be paranoid, about this all sort of thing. But with a bunch of illogical ideas. Even then, though, I think that it's still kind of scary and kind of interesting at times, just because I think it's an inherently scary concept of, like, paranoia and not being able to trust anyone and stuff like that. The Zygons, it's always kind of tough for me to take them seriously, too, just because I get it, they're an older villain, they're an older monster and everything like that, they're going to look a little bit goofier. I just think that they look real dumb. Like, I think Zygons look real dumb in practice, so it's a really good thing that they can transform and look different. The body count in this episode was also kind of interesting to me. We have that line from the Doctor saying, like, try to kill as few as you can, because we need somebody to interrogate, or we need somebody to talk to, ask questions afterwards, which I thought was actually one of the more, like, true statements that it was more true to this current version of the Doctor that they have had in a long time. This sort of, like, weird pseudo-pacifism of the Doctor where I hate everyone who does violence unless it's me doing violence or my friends doing violence. He's just been, this much kind of more, like, kind of aggressive version of himself lately and stuff like that, and he's been, more willing to kill, en masse and things like that. So just, like, having him just stand out and admit it and not, like, pull this weird holier-than-thou crap when he's not doing it himself was kind of interesting and nice to me. I didn't like how they handled Kate in that respect, which is that, like, Kate has been this, like, great character. I love it every time she comes on, daughter of Colonel Lethbridge Stewart and everything like that. And suddenly she's always been a scientist first. That is literally how that character is introduced to the series. And it's always, I'm a scientist first, the science is in charge of the military and it's a great idea and whatever. And then suddenly she's just this weird, like, jingoistic murderer woman too, like, because that's what the script needed her to be. Like, that we, like, they did the same thing with I forget the character from season 2 of Doctor Who, the MP for Flydale North. I don't know if any of you guys remember her. Nope. Okay.
Harriet Jones.
Okay, yeah, there you go. Thanks. Thanks for letting me hang there for a few seconds.
I had to turn the mute button off because I've got a barking dog.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, that's the like basic Doctor Who-y stuff. Like I don't know the incredibly thick themes, you know, like of the like war on terror and stuff like that. Like very literally, like they bring up like the Mexican border crossing and stuff like that. It is interesting to me because I think A, like, you know, talking about larger societal issues and stuff like that has always been the purview of science fiction, and that is what science fiction is for, and you know that's what we should expect it to be for. I thought it was like it was pretty heavy-handed at times, like literally just like having Zygons on the Mexican border, like the Doctor's talking about and stuff like that. I also thought it was a little bit strange when because it is very specifically like about the United States, even down to the point of we have a drone, you know, we have a drone strike happening, and like the one American member of unit just happens to be the drone operator, whereas everybody else is British, but they made sure that they had an American accent on that part. It felt strangely like, again, going back to like the holier than thou thing. Again, I think this is like important stuff that should be talked about and should be addressed in fiction and science fiction and stuff like that. But it seemed a little bit strange, like to like specifically focus on a lot of these things when, you know, Great Britain has its own, you know, immigration and refugee issues and stuff like that have been, you know, very much printed in the press and stuff like that, and they are like it tossed aside in like kind of this one line of like the Doctor saying like oh, like this goofy little line of like you'll be afraid that they're going to steal your benefits or something like that. And but then it's very much like all the imagery and all of the dialogue is very much focused on a very specific part of it. And I know these episodes, you know, are probably in production long ahead of time and stuff like that. So maybe it's just a matter of like when they wrote this, it was that, you know, not as big of an issue. I also thought it was a little bit of a false equivalency in the idea of like the Zygons are, they kind of got it wrong with like the idea that like Zygons are powerful enough to actually win and stuff like that. So like they do too good of a job of making the Zygons seem like a real threat if they're to do the kind of metaphor that they're doing, I think anyway, which is that, you know, in reality, you know, in the war on terror and stuff like that, like, you know, thousands of people getting murdered every day who can't defend themselves is pretty much the norm by a big bully country, which is, you know, in this case, the United States. And like the showing, like the saying, like, okay, this is all just a giant metaphor for the war on terror and for, you know, the horrible jingoistic nature of like the United States military and command structure and all that stuff. Like in reality, the people that are getting bombed aren't, you know, they're not villains. They're not scary. They're not like able to fight back in the same, to the same degree and to the same level and stuff like that. Whereas in this one, they very much set up the Zygons as they shot first. And also, Zygon shot first, and the most. Like, I don't think a unit kills a single Zygon in this entire episode. It's just a bunch of, they talk about killing Zygons constantly, but the Zygons are just like murdering them en masse and take over all of London and, you know, take over a town in America and, you know, undermine units and destroy an entire squadron of them in London and everything like that. And like they kind of portray the unit as this almost like hapless like underdog to the powerful Zygon invasion, which to me is like, if the message you're trying to send here is like this is very much a metaphor for the war on terror and everything, you are getting it backwards and wrong in a really destructive way that I am not that I don't think I'm necessarily okay with. And I think that's where I'll leave it because I've been talking for much longer than I said I was.
Thank you for the Stephen Strum show. We'll see you guys next
week. Yeah, we'll see you guys next week.
Okay. next week I'll have listened to all of the Doom Coalition and I'll just talk about that with the whole episode.
Okay, I'll go next. My thoughts are a little different than Stephen's. I think this maybe was my favorite episode of the season. I absolutely loved this episode.
Scream of incredulity.
love this episode. There were so many great themes. I loved Osgood's the explanation for why she's alive and why she went into hiding. I thought that was great. I love the Doctor calling himself Dr. Disco and that just falling flat with Clara, and then he says, to call himself Dr. Funkenstein. Another great thing. I love the Doctor just rocking out to electric guitar in one scene.
I think the Doctor being like this weird middle-aged man thing is like the most misguided thing I've talked to about that character.
Absolutely brilliant.
Steven, let Dolly have his say.
Yes. And, Shut up, Steven. Sean, you weren't even here last week or the last 8 weeks. You don't have a chance. Okay, just kidding.
I know. It's my first show of the season.
So,
all right.
No, I thought it was great. It was I love the idea of truth or consequences, and it's gonna lead me to something in a second here, real quick. The whole idea of family and truth and understanding the truth and what is the truth, I think, was a really strong theme throughout this. There was that one scene where the unit member is supposed to do a strike on a house. She comes to find out that it's her son and her husband. They're both Zygons. She didn't know, I'm assuming this, but she didn't know that they were, that her own son was a Zygon. She was supposed to do a strike on the house. There was a lot of humanization. And yes, there's this whole idea of this terrorist wing of Zygons. Again, very much, very similar to me to District 9, which I love that film. Great film. And the whole idea of genocide was built in there. It's like, okay, they signed this contract that if something went wrong, the one side could obliterate the other. You know, they didn't take into account that the one side was a crazy faction of Zygons that was, you know, buried within there. But I thought all that played really well. I loved the twists and turns. Okay, this is spoilers because obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you've watched the episode. If you haven't, stop. I love the fact that Clara was a Zygon and her actual body was was trapped inside Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. Okay, so this is where it gets back to Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. That's named – it used to be Hot Springs, New Mexico, and it was renamed Truth or Consequences after the town or after the game show. And one of the big things that happened on the game show – I don't know if a lot of people remember this or not, but – at the end, in a bunch of the broadcasts, one of the stunts that, or some of the stunts that people would do, or one of the, you know, one of the things they had to do for the consequences was a loved one that they hadn't seen in years. Sometimes they were going off to war. It was actually a lot of folks that had gone off to war, like to Vietnam and other things, or family members that were away at college, or, you know, people that they hadn't seen in sometimes in decades, brothers and sisters, lovers. Be careful because Danny Pink is around the corner. These people would come out of nowhere and they would completely shock the contestant. So I think there's something to that aspect, and I'm really interested to see how they play up Truth or Consequences this next episode, because I think there's something there and it may be Danny Pink related. Maybe I'm just projecting, but I actually think this is what's going to directly lead into the wind down of Clara is this little mini arc here. I loved it. There was a lot of great action. I loved the smoldering piles of ash that were humans that were just left in little piles inside a dumpster, like neat little piles. I thought that was great. They would just kind of vibrate and shake the dumpsters. Left in a great cliffhanger with Clara, with the Doctor becoming the president of the world just so you can get on the airplane to jet around the planet. And then the idea of hybrids, which is the third time now we've heard hybrids, maybe the fourth time, maybe we've heard it every single one of these story arcs, the idea of hybrids, which that's the major overarching thing. And I think in the end, this is what's going to bring Clara down, is we find out that Clara is some type of Time Lord human hybrid or whatever, or maybe she's a TARDIS human hybrid, I don't know, but the idea of hybrids, and the Doctor even says it. He goes, yeah, hybrid, okay, so you might call yourself, okay, yeah, the Doctor even points it out. So with that said, absolutely love this episode, and I didn't watch it even until lunchtime today. It was just a busy weekend with Halloween, so at lunch today I sat back at my office, put the headphones on, put my tiny little iPhone up on my keyboard, and ate lunch and watched this episode. Totally enjoyed it, loved it. Got home from work, put on the old DVR and watch it on the big screen just so I can see it again in higher definition glory. Loved it. Love this episode. I loved how silly some things were. To me, this was fun Doctor Who, and that's what I had to say. Sean, your turn.
I appreciate the elaborate breakdown there of your viewing habits.
Yes.
Ate a sandwich, hey, watched the show, went home.
It was pot roast.
I started downloading Halo 5 while it began.
Played on the DVR.
Played some Fallout 4.
Yeah.
Okay, Sean, your turn.
So this must be what it feels like to be on the opposite side of the spectrum and what you guys go through every week. Because holy crap, are we on opposite ends of the spectrum. One thing I want to point out before, because I know I'm going to forget. It seems like something really weird is going on with Clara. Like, even before the whole switch happened, then she had 127 missed calls and wasn't answering her phone.
Yeah, and she didn't even care to call back.
Didn't care, and it was very strange because this whole season we've had, like, gung-ho, spit-in-the-face-of-death Clara ready to go on adventures and save people and fight wars and whatever.
Yeah.
And that was weird to me. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's a red herring. But I feel like the two overarching themes of the season are whatever's going on with her and all the hybrid hints. So the fact that that would happen, I don't know, caught my attention.
Totally agree.
And I thought it was weird. The good, I will agree with you on Dr. Disco. I thought that was pretty cool.
And that's it. Perfect. Yep. No, yeah.
Well, listen, I think the Zygons as a monster always have potential. I think there are some really cool story elements that happened here. I'm actually not going to touch on any of the bigger metaphors or anything like that. I think that could be a whole other conversation. I have a feeling maybe that's what Marcus is going to talk about. Yeah. I think, Steven, you did a good job with that. For me, as you guys know, I'm always the defender of you have to suspend, you know, the sense of reality, and you have to be willing to believe the unbelievable on this show. That's kind of how it works. And I'm always willing to stretch that. But I thought this week just broke that in, like, such a way that I just could not get past it. Now, after I watched it, I kind of sat on it for a little bit, and before I watched it a second time, I was like, you know, there's something about it. I think it was just boring. Like, my first reaction was just boring. Everything took too long to set up, and I did not care at all about the cliffhanger. And that was the first time all season. Like, I love the two-parter stuff, and I just did not enjoy it at all. I thought it was plotting. I thought, you know, but then I was, you know, but there was some really, there's some okay stuff in there, and I wonder if it's not just that. And then I started really thinking about it, and everybody in this episode is a moron. Every single person is an idiot. Everything in the plot is written and designed to just move characters forward at the, like, just to service the plot. No one acts like themselves, and it's bonkers. Okay, it's bonkers. Like the church scene, right? It makes no sense. And this highly trained unit, I get what they're going for. It's like, oh, you see your loved ones, but how did their loved ones get to wherever the fuck is Stan? And just like, oh God. Okay, so you don't want to shoot your mom in the face. I get it. That's fine. Why not handcuff some people, right? Why not maybe bring them in and interrogate them like you do with humans suspected of infiltrating and being hostile, right? No, we're gonna put our guns down in this whole friggin' place. We're just gonna go into church and be evaporated and turn to friggin' tribal leftover burnt hair shit. I don't know. Dumb, right? The evolution of the Zygons as characters, I thought, is fine. Again, I thought it serviced the plot, but now they're psychic now, and they don't need to keep the clones around unless they want to keep the clones around. I don't know. The end was a little convoluted, but whatever. That's fine. But like the fact that they turn Unit into this joke, like it's insane to me. It's like at the end, right? And they've got everybody surrounded in the tunnel or wherever it was, and they're like, "Oh, is this a trap? Oh crap! Grandma is with us now in this tunnel on this highly militarized op, and she says it's a trap." Well, shit, better just stand here and let everybody get within 2 feet of us and our automatic weapons and zap us to death. Ha-ha! Well, now Unit's wiped out. Like, oh, it's just – it was such – they've done such a good job over the past couple seasons of establishing this kind of world government sort of when it needs to be and this highly militarized, highly talented force when they need them to be. And all of that was just wiped out to just give the Zygons full run of, like, London or wherever the hell else they are, right? And, like, don't even get me started on Kate, who goes to New Mexico by herself, infiltrates, quote-unquote, the town, investigates by herself with no backup or anything like that, and then gets Zygoned at the end. Like, it's just so dumb. It's so dumb. And the whole episode to me just reeked of a plot that was there to just make the characters not be themselves, not act like they would in any other situation, just to move forward to the second half of the episode. And even the doctor felt like a spectator in this whole story, right? Like, he doesn't take charge of anything. He does his doctor thing and says, no death, no bombings, we're gonna talk this out or whatever. But nothing. And then he takes a plane to go somewhere else because he doesn't need the TARDIS, because the plot says he doesn't need the TARDIS. And then of course he doesn't, because at the end of the episode, of course, being on the plane is gonna be a liability. Like, oh God. It's just like, it felt like he was there for the ride, and that, like,
wow.
It's dumb. It's dumb. And I just can't wrap my head around it. Like, there's a couple of cool beats in there, you know, the idea of evil Clara or whatever, but by the end I just could not bring myself to care. Like, it's just so implausible on so many levels. And I hate saying that about Doctor Who, but, you know, when you have these kinds of shows and they establish the rules and the things that make the universe work and make characters who they are or whatever, and then they throw those out the window, like, it just, to me, I cannot abide by it. Like, it's just the dumbest, like, I'm repeating myself, but I really didn't like this episode very much.
Wow. These are very strong comments from you. I don't think I've seen you react this negatively to a Doctor Who episode.
Because it should have been great. It should have been a great episode. It's been, in my opinion, a pretty damn good season so far. And this episode should have been fantastic. And instead, it's just hogwash. It is just nonsense. And quite frankly, I maybe they'll redeem some of it next week, but I just don't. I don't get it. Like, I don't know what happened here. I don't understand. I don't know. And I think it's the same writer from, I think last year was Kill the Moon or the other episode that a lot of people didn't like.
It was Kill the Moon.
So, and at least that one embraced being silly, right? Like, that one embraced being silly, you know? And that was fine. A lot of people hate that episode. I thought it was okay.
I remember not Kill the Moon. Yeah, that one was okay. Yeah.
But this episode really is striving to be this really serious thing, touching on a lot of issues and being this kind of metaphor for a lot of really important stuff going on in the world. And not only is it heavy-handed, which, again, I'm not personally going to touch on because I feel like other people are going to do that better than me, but it's just stupid. It's just so dumb. And it comes at the expense of the Doctor as a character, and it comes at the expense of all these allies that they've spent so much time building up and showing to be these competent, you know, professional skilled people, and they were just window dressing. I mean, even Capaldi, who did a cool job as usual, was given almost nothing to do here. And it was just, I don't know. That's my say. I didn't like it at all.
Okay. Well, that leaves one more individual, and that would be Marcus Beer.
All right. Pull up your chairs. Pull up your chairs, folks, because school's in. First of all.
Here you go.
I'm with Dally. This is, without a doubt, the best episode of not only this season, but also that steaming pile of shit that passed for last season. And Sean, I'm not gonna pick a fight with you, but I gotta say, given the amount of shit that was doled out by Moffat last season, this is head and shoulders above anything. So I'm gonna throw out the following caveat. This is halfway through a two-part story. So that's the first thing. We're halfway down on this journey. Now, given that this is Doctor Who, under the watchful eye of Stephen Moffat as a showrunner, there the odds are spectacularly high that they will basically waste every single bit of drama and potential intrigue and storytelling that they've built up in this episode and throw it out the fucking window next week by fucking it up, and the Doctor hits a reset button and everything goes back to before the special, you know, the anniversary, and he stops the other two from negotiating the truce. Wouldn't put it past anything run by that particular Scottish ass clown. But what I will say is, all right, yes, obviously it's, you know, likely, you know, a lightly disguised look at the war on terror. I think it basically does say that war has changed, because the Doctor Who and unit of Classic Who doesn't work anymore because the enemy doesn't wear uniforms. They wear disguises. They look, and if you talk to any current serving or any serving or formerly serving member of the military, whether you're British, US, whatever, and they've been into the Middle East or whatever, they will tell you that there's no, they're not fighting against uniforms anymore. They're fighting against people in disguise. So that really is what it is right now. And I've seen a lot of people bitching and moaning that this was a right-wing fascist episode, that, you know, everybody was out to kill, 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 kill. And I'm going to take issue with that particular thing in a minute. I'm going to back to something Stephen said about the kind of like strong anti-US bias. I think I will actually turn around and drop that as that's a bunch of bollocks, because this is actually a very anti-British government. It's setting itself up as a very anti-British government episode, in my opinion, because I, you know, obviously I follow what's going on back in the UK. I follow what the Conservative government has been doing with, you know, over the last 4.5 years with regards to, you know, the war on terror and what they're doing to the BBC and what they're doing in general, and, you know, the rise of Britain First over there. This is a very British episode. I think the inclusion of the American units staff was only there as a pander because BBC America is now doing Doctor Who as a co-production. If you watch the end of the episode, it will say co-production with BBC America, which is, you know, does not bode well. I'm sorry. No offense, but American Fingers should not be anywhere near Doctor Who. Still love you guys, but no.
Hey, we saved you in WW2.
We're not even going to go there.
I like to pretend everybody at BBC America is still British and just transplanted over here to work here.
Unfortunately, it used to be the case, but not anymore. As you can tell by the fact that they run fucking Star Trek The Next Generation marathons 4 days a week. It looks like they employed a bunch of wankers from Spike TV. But anywho, I digress. So, first of all, it's a slam on the British government. It's a slam on the war on terror. I mean, yes, you do have some of the commanders being bomb, bomb, kill, kill. But when you get, you know, you get down to it, the American soldier who, you know, was flying the drone, she couldn't execute, literally, because they got in her head and she saw her family. She couldn't execute. So it shows a humanistic side.
Yep.
You go then to the church scene and the American soldier again, who couldn't, you know, even though he knows that the odds are that this is a Zygon, it looks like his mom, it sounds like his mom, he can't do it. So the Americans are coming out of it pretty well right now. Kind of, you know, and then, you know, it does kind of portray, and you got to remember that the BBC, very liberal, you know, it's a liberal corporation in a lot of ways. I mean, the hierarchy has sort of like gone, you know, the old school, the old guard have kind of wheedled out. It is a very liberal, facing corporation, and their productions, you know, talk to that. You look at Jack Harkness and Torchwood, and, you know, you look at some of the other things that they've thrown in from season one of Doctor Who. I mean, when Russell T. Davis was handling the reboot, an openly gay man was handling the reboot, and the Doctor, you know, introduced these characters, and the Doctor's, you know, also the Doctor flirted with Captain Jack. I mean, there's definitely been, you know, you can't really say that they have a right-wing bias at the BBC, because they don't. So I'm gonna go through this. Like I said, if you're a soldier, you don't know who you're fighting. I mean, that is the way it goes right now, and that to me felt really kind of realistic. The one voice of sanity was always the Doctor throughout the episode.
Yep.
Because he was the one who was being the Doctor. He was being the, you know, the guy who was saying, don't you dare bomb. We'll send people there. I'll go there. Don't know why he didn't take the TARDIS, obviously. But, you know, he wanted it. I think it's also, you know, the Doctor is also kind of naive in a lot of ways. And, you know, he does still loves that grandiose kind of thing of, I want to be in the, you know, the president plane.
Yeah, so the ego.
He's looking at it from a, you know, kind of a little bit of an ego plumper as well. And he wants to make a bit of a show of it. Sorry, I'm going through the points in my head. The whole thing, you know, unit right now looks like a wreck. I don't know if I missed an episode or I missed a memo, but unit looks like it's been decimated. And maybe this is a knock on from the end of last season when all the Cybermen were there.
They reference that normally they can, and it is a throwaway line, normally they can constrict conscript soldiers from standing armies, but because the Zygon thing is such a secret, they have to make do with the amount of troops that they have. Which
okay, so fair enough. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, unit isn't like, you know, it's not. Unit feels like Shield right now. You know, Shield post Hydra, where they don't know who they can trust. So you know, the fact that they're all in safe houses, there's a minimal amount of people. Yes, there are some plot devices that are used. You know, the silly decisions. Why did Stewart go to New Mexico, or you know, by herself? That was kind of, you know, that was a kind of strange decision. And obviously, it's set up to look like she was killed. Well, I know she's packing a gun. I know she's not afraid to use it. And I know she's, you know, she was also the one in the 50th anniversary special who was prepared to blow the shit out of London. To basically get, you know, to destroy the Zygons then. So I'm sure she's put a bullet in that particular head and is she's pretending to be, you know, a Zygon or whatever. Because that wouldn't be the first time that, you know, that plot device is used. The whole thing with Clara certainly makes her more interesting. She's obviously not dead yet either. They're saving that. Sure. I just thought that the way they handled... You know, this one is, you know, it's designed to make people think. You can't take anything in this episode of Doctor Who at face value. And, you know, let's look at the hybrid thing. I mean, the whole concept of the hybrid is so interesting. And I heard Dali talking about it briefly, but I was out of the room trying to pacify a rabid 4-pound dog. but the whole, you know, we've heard the word hybrid come time and time again this season. But... the hybrid, you know, the Doctor's fascinated by Oz's, you know, hybridity, if you will, because that is the ideal to him. That is the ideal that a lot of people hold in society. She is basically, you know, she's the best parts of herself and she's the best parts of the Zygon culture as well. I mean, they, you know, the two of them merged, they bonded and, you know, they took the best parts of their culture and adapted in, you know, into that. And that's the ideal that Doctor Who, you know, the Doctor will want to see. That's the ideal that we all want to see. You know, she is this shining beacon and that's why she is worth saving, that she is the one who is, you know, can show that everybody can live together in peace. Everybody can get on. And that this is only a very small group who are radicalizing the, you know, the additional pods that are being born here. And so again, a lot of the responses I've seen online have been, oh, this is right-wing fascist propaganda. You know, the Zygons are the Muslims and the Muslims are all evil. And I didn't get that at all. I actually looked at it from the perspective of that if there's evil on both sides. There are evil commanders who want to bomb the shit out of everybody. Mm-hmm. And there are evil Zygons who want to turn, but a lot of, you know, the good ones are the ones who, you know, want to live in harmony and have been living in harmony in the past 2.5 whatever it is years since it happened. So, you know, I just thought it was great in that you don't know who to turn to in this episode. You cannot take anything at face value. Every single decision that you might think is stupid might actually pan out to be something totally different in the second half, because we don't know who to trust. And I love that. And that, you know, this is the first episode that really has tackled anything remotely, you know, kind of real world, and is doing it in a very interesting way. It isn't Doctor-centric, which is also, you know, sometimes a good thing. I mean, you know, so you look at some of the best not so Doctor centric episodes. Moffat himself wrote the one where, you know, we were introduced to the Weeping Angels. You know, he is a bit part player in this ensemble, and it was well acted. I thought most of the plot points, you know, they stand up because you have to take them with a pinch of salt, because one, it's fucking Doctor Who and it's sci-fi, and two, it's part one of a 2-part series. And given everything that, you know, how up and down the part ones and the part twos have been over the last couple of weeks, and after how up and down last season was, I think this was just a phenomenally strong episode. And I think those who are complaining right now, one, need to step back perhaps with the vociferousness of it, and especially the ones calling it out for being political and, you know, it's like alien, it's talking about these particular groups in a really sort of like unsubtle way. It's not talking about anybody It's taking a snapshot of the world right now. It's taking a snapshot of Europe right now, and Britain in particular, with the rise of Nigel Farage and his Britain First group, and the fact that they are instilling a lot of fear in them, you know, and stupidity in the masses, because people are not understanding and not looking beyond the color of someone's skin, or just hearing something totally different that is different to what they're used to and are terrified of it. This is what the right wing does, and this is what the right wing is doing in this particular episode. And the one constant is always the doctor trying to get us to be better than ourselves, but, you know, hit that potential that we can. And there are people in there who will start to support him and will come around, and he will hopefully find a way to get this all working by the end of next week. And it's interesting to see, you know, Clara's still alive. We know she's still alive because, you know, it takes a little while for the imprint to take. They say a few days. So, you know, she's been out for what, a day maybe? So we'll see her next week, and we'll see how it goes. But this one's got so much potential on it right now. I was gripped from end to end, because I'll come back to this, and I've said it, you know, two or three times. You don't know who to trust in this episode. And that in itself is a beautiful thing. And this is a quite grown-up episode of Doctor Who. And thank God for it. All right.
Well, I think
God bless
I may just make a quick counter. I think, I do agree that the people complaining about the political side and the heavy hand, I mean, that's whatever. I'm in agreement with you there, Marcus, but I personally just think that this would be a better story, A, if it was a little more subtle and a little less heavy handed. It's very heavy handed. Whether or not you think that's a fine thing or a bad thing or whatever, that seems to vary by person. You're right about tactics changing. You're right about the war being the people who aren't wearing uniforms. You can't trust anybody or whatever. But there are still, like, there's still a basis for logic there, right? I mean, it's not like these people – it's not like UNIT went out in the streets of London and couldn't figure out who's who, right? I mean, this dude's mom showed up in a battlefield hundreds of miles away. The drone pilot's kids showed up in wherever the heck a stand. Like, there's no rhyme or reason to it. There's still tactics, right? You sit down, people, you interrogate, you investigate. I just feel like there's a really, really good story here. That
they're still human, though. It shows that you, no matter, and you know, I think this is also a good way of humanizing the soldiers, because, you know, we only see the, you know, the reports coming back, and we always see the cat, you know, bombs going off and drones and this and that. But this is actually kind of showing that 90% of everybody who serves, yes, you get your tossers, but these guys are human. And look, how would we react in the same way? How would you react if you were standing there with a gun on something that you deep down you probably knew was alien, but looked like your mom, because it could get inside your head and could
basically my mom who didn't know when my birthday was. But, my mom who doesn't know when my birthday is. I mean, come on. I'm not saying I'd shoot her in the face, but you could put some handcuffs on and do some basic interrogation here. And my point is that you're 100% right. I just disagree that it's good in this story. I think all of the themes, everything they're trying to do here is phenomenal. I just think the execution is crap. I think it's crap. And I think the execution is crap because they're rushing to get to wherever the payoff is going to be. And they did it at the expense of moving the chess pieces around where they needed to be. They needed UNIT wiped out. And instead of infiltrating it from within, they put them in these dumb situations where they, you know, oh, well, let's go see what the deal is here. And then everybody gets into a church and gets turned into a bag of hair, electric hair or whatever. And whatever. And it's just like, it just – there was one too many things for me in this episode to think that it was as good. And I'm glad you guys like it. I'm actually really glad you like it. I'm just not there. Like I just can't wrap my head around all the dumb out of character stuff that happens. And I think it's just too much for a pinch of salt.
I mean, you gotta remember, this is Doctor Who we're talking about. This is
that seems like sci-fi
family. We're not talking, you know. I don't think there's anything dumber in that episode than any episode of Homeland or 24 or any other one where it is a standard trope to show that the military can be kind of stupid and kind of, you know, inept. It's the same when they show the show cops doing it in shows, because the cops are always the inept ones. But I actually think that this has done more to humanize them than anything that you'll see in some of the, in some of those other shows, because it throws back time and time again, and it puts them in a, you know, what you think is a stupid plot device. Nobody knows how you could handle that. How you, you know, you could be the best trained soldier in the world, and you're put with the rest of your, you know, your group in front of people who look and sound and act like your family. You know, you're not going to shoot first and ask questions later, and that's why I think it shows them in a different light, because it's the power of the family that unfortunately leads them to their doom.
I agree. But
you know, this whole thing that they see, they can't shoot. I wouldn't be able to shoot something that looked like my
mom. I'm saying you should shot her in the face. I'm saying that these are highly trained soldiers who have spent their careers dealing with alien and otherworldly threats, and they knew going in. It's not like they showed up to a church not knowing a Zygon invasion was happening, and then they walked in thinking they were going to have tea and prayers, and got zapped to death. Like these are troops all over the story, all over the world, that are getting wiped out knowing full well what they're facing. I just think it could have been presented better. I think there's a really good story in there, and the presentation is just garbage.
I really beg to differ, especially.
And I think the pinch of salt thing seems to really only apply for you or for me or for Dolly or Steve, depending on whether or not we like the episode overall.
Because
I can
do the pinch of salt because we flip flop on stuff every week. I mean, you know, it's like, oh, the pinch of salt
is our sonic screwdriver on this podcast. Well,
look, I mean, let's face it. Pinch of salt could have been, you know, could have been thrown at me at the end of, you know, last season with the two-parter. Only I would counter with a metric ton of salt. But I mean, you know, given the, you know, I would place this episode way above almost anything last season, with the possible exception of the murals coming to life. That was, you know, the flat 2D people, which I think was still probably one of the best episodes of the last few years. But this one to me has just been. This has been a shine, you know, a really good, you know, kind of grown up version of Doctor Who. I'm sure the kids probably were like, "What?" But I mean, this is good stuff.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see. I'm curious to see where this goes. Yeah. Very interesting.
This is huge. Our responses were all across the board for this one. So this is one of the episodes of the season that we were all looking forward to. We heard Osgood is coming back, so we thought, oh great, I wonder how they're going to spin it. Of course, there was a Zygon talk, so I think that was right on, but
I think they handled that well. I was very unhappy that they were going to do like a quote-unquote cop-out on her death last season. Mm-hmm. I thought they handled that very well. I assumed that the Zygons were gone. So the fact that they had sort of like this link and she's become a completely different person, whether or not she's the human or the Zygon or both, and she says the question doesn't matter, whatever. I thought that was actually really well done. Of all the paths they could have taken with that, I thought that was really cool.
I think that next week's episode or this coming weekend is going to be very, very telltale for potentially how Clara and obviously the Osgood and everything and unit starts to play out overall. It was just sitting back and hearing the rest of you fine folks discuss this episode was mind blowing to me, because it was all over the place in a great way. This is why we have this podcast, to prove that Sean is wrong. He misses a week, he comes back and he blows up on us. So it's all good. Yeah, there were some heavy, heavy good conversations in there, gents.
Look, I mean, that's the beauty. Right? Sometimes we'll all agree it's a fantastic episode, and sometimes we will agree to disagree.
I'm glad that we had varied opinions for this episode. The episodes that we agree on everything can be the most boring sometimes.
I hope that they pull it round next week so that, you know, they can execute properly to everybody's, enjoyment. And it will be interesting to see where we stand next week. Because, I mean, you look at the last few, and my comment has been every time is that this is, you know, maybe an hour and 15 crammed into almost 2 hours. And I would love to see, you know, more of the intrigue and, you know, a really solid ending.
It is interesting, and I read sorry, Dolly. I read somewhere today that it seems like, and this could be good, assuming they don't botch the finale or the second part, there really isn't a good ending here for the Doctor.
No,
right?
I mean, and that's the beauty.
And I hope, I really hope that they don't just press the reset button and everything goes back hunky dory, because there's some really potentially, like, to continue the heavy themes that they're, at least in my opinion, trying to do. There's some really cool stuff they can do here, and I just hope they execute on it. Whether or not it's the box, which winds up, you know, being some sort of Time Lord execution device, or whether or not, you know, Zygons wind up being relocated. I mean, there's so many different ways they can do it.
But by the way, there was a box in the Truth or Consequences game show when Bob Barker was host called Barker's Box that had four drawers in there. And as you opened each drawer, this happened again at the end of the game, depending on how many drawers you were opening, each one would have some level of cash in there. And one of the four drawers was a, you know, kind of the stop drawer. So you have to choose which of those drawers are the correct drawers and not try to get that one. So I'm interested that they have a box and they have Truth or Consequences.
Oh, that's fun trivia. I didn't know that.
So a little bit of tie in there.
I mean, there's a lot of Zygons around. There's a lot of, like,
20 million Zygons apparently.
And, you know, I'm very, very curious how they handle this.
Well, here's comments from a couple of our listeners. Mike Zero at Mike Zero says, "That was Hey, Mike, how are you? That was a super fun episode of Doctor Who. It was like an episode of 24, and the twists were great.
God damn it, Mike.
Favorite season 9 episode." Says, "By the way, why isn't anyone asking where duplicate Kate is from the Day of the Doctor?" Interesting.
That reminds me.
That is a good point. Do we know if this is Kate or duplicate Kate? I mean, there's a couple of duplicates wandering around.
Well, it's interesting because Osgood made it seem like that doesn't matter, right? I mean, that they don't necessarily care the ones that were duped prior to the ones that try to fit in. But another interesting point, at the end of the episode, did they say how long they've been trying to do the invasion and that they've been stealing people in pods and stuff? Because I feel like they said it's been at least a year, right?
Right.
What does that mean for one Danny Pink?
So again, this is what I bring up about the Truth or Consequences game show and how they would bring loved ones out at the very end. And I still think that Danny Pink may be the loved one. We may get a Danny Pink cameo or some reference. And again, I think this is what's going to start bringing Clara down, because I think Clara's last episode is it episode 10 of this season? Because there's only 12 episodes. I can't remember. Maybe.
Oh, is she not going to the finale?
I'm not 100%. I'm not 100% sure. Don't quote me on it.
So then, did all those Cybermen conscript Zygons? Or like a bunch of Zygons?
Is there a Cybermen Zygon hybrid out there?
I hope not.
No, God. Postmodern Dad actually decided to write on our Facebook page. He says, "In general, I like the latest episode. I wish I could remember exactly where I said it so I could point back and prove I said it when I did. But when the last season trailer hit, I said that Clara lifting up the rocket launcher wasn't her, but a Zygon. Good job nailing it. There's no proof, Pixar didn't happen. I knew it in my bones. I wondered about the whole Missy zapping Osgood bit. I like her. I don't understand why he chose to fly off in the plane rather than the TARDIS, though. Seems dumb. Overall, and it's getting redundant, but this really kind of felt like a third Doctor story, wondering if Kate is a Zygon duplicate as well as Osgood." A lot of interesting things. A lot of thought. A lot of possible twists and upcoming twists. I think there'll be a lot more twists this coming episode for this weekend as well.
So is Unit completely gone? Like,
it can't be, because not all of them went to, you know, they were kind of split up all around the world, weren't they?
I would think so.
All right, well, we've ran on for quite a while now, over an hour. Let's give our ratings for this episode. First of all, anybody have any final thoughts?
Steve?
Yes, I definitely do. Specifically, that I just wanted to point out that, I can just give my rating in this too, just to save time as well. But this will just be my closing. I just wanted to point out the fact that, like, I think that I don't think that the like people who are going out there and saying like that this is intentional right wing, you know, conservative bullshit, like, stuff are correct either. I don't think that that is what this thing was necessarily like intended to do. And I think that's also the kind of one of the bigger problems in it. Something that we've, you know, is getting talked about more and more these days, but there's this kind of growing concept of like, you can be well-meaning with your like political views and stuff like that. And you can be, you can think you're being progressive and stuff like that, but there are plenty of liberals, you know, and the people who, you know, identify as such anyway, who can just fuck it up, who can just like have the incorrect opinion on, you know, or like the incorrect way of like expressing their opinion on a certain thing that like expresses it in the opposite way. And I think that's slightly more subversive and slightly more damaging. And I think that was what was at play in this episode. I think that it's weird to say, like, I think their heart was in the right place, like, because I don't necessarily know that that's the correct way to phrase it either. But I don't think they were intentionally trying to be like, you know, right wingy, whatever. I think that they just made the mistake of like the sort of, like I said, the false equivalency between the Zygons and the like metaphor for like terrorist cells and, you know, that sort of thing in the real world by like portraying them, not, you know, they are portraying them in this sort of light of like they're super powerful and they're, you know, they're like they have the power to like over topple governments and overthrow governments and stuff like that. But the part where they're killing people doesn't necessarily, like, no, I get it. That's just how that metaphor is going to play out. But it's the more subtle, more subversive things at play in the background. On top of that, I do think there were some good elements to this episode as regards like progressive themes and stuff like that, because I think something that we didn't talk about a ton, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, is there are also themes of like queer politics and stuff like that in here, especially when you get to Osgood and like refusing to choose sides, which to me seemed like a very clear metaphor for transgender characters and transgender people in the real world and stuff like that, and refusing to choose a side, you know, refusing to identify as, you know, a specific gender norm as opposed to, you know, refusing to identify as a specific species. I thought that was kind of like an interesting thing. Although I will also say on top of that, it's 2015, almost 2016. Just put a fucking transgender character on television. God damn it. Like, I have this weird ambivalent feeling about that sort of stuff, you know, particularly as I have a vested interest in like LGBTQ themes.
Come on, big here at the end, buddy.
Yeah, I know. Well, I let you guys, you know, I got a lot of stuff out early and I let you guys talk, but I didn't come in really to counter argue at all. So I'm coming in. But yeah, like, I think that, like, I'm always ambivalent about that sort of thing. Like, I'm always ambivalent about the, like, idea of, like, oh, well, it's a metaphor for all this stuff. It's like, well, yeah, great. Like, it's great that you're doing a metaphor, but you've been doing metaphors for, you know, 40 fucking years, you know? Like, just put those characters, like, they literally use the term normalize on this thing, which is a thing that I've personally fought for in the past and stuff like that, normalizing the idea. Like, that's why it's important to have those kinds of characters on television and stuff like that, is because it normalizes it in the eyes of people who, like Marcus said, aren't used to people who are different, who look different from them or act different from them, or, you know, are different from them in strange ways. The way that you fix that is by putting those people on television. So I appreciate any time that a metaphor gets used, you know, for those themes and things, but also, like, I just stop it. Like, it's enough of a metaphor. Just do the real thing. But I, again, think that was, as far as that metaphor goes, I think it was a much stronger metaphor than the Zygon terrorist cell thing. So I was happy with that. So there were good things in this episode. I thought that it failed on the what it was is expressly trying to do, which was the very political stuff like that. I thought it failed in a well-meaning way. So I'll probably just give this like an, I don't know, like a one seems too aggressive. So maybe a 2 out of 5 on this one, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm a 2 out of 5 right now too.
Wow. Okay. Well then I'm going to go 5 out of 5. Thank you.
It's going to score it low. I'm going to give it a perfect.
No, I love this episode. It was great.
Oh, that's
cool.
Tons of fun. Cool. Just the way you said it was hilarious.
Whatever you guys have seen later. Marcus, what are you giving this wonderful episode?
7 out of 5.
Oh, yes. The swing vote. And my 5 and 7 equals 12. That beats your guys' scores. Oh, excellent. So,
just read that supposedly next week is co-written by Mr. Moffat, Marcus. So you better.
God help. I mean, look, I have.
God help us all.
This is the thing. Every two-parter. The more these two-parters go on, I have zero. I have less and less faith that they're going to execute the second half.
Mm-hmm.
So big red reset button coming up. I'm telling you.
Hopefully not. Yeah.
That's definitely a danger. Like the way that you phrased it earlier, saying like, there's no good ending for this. Like there's no good ending for the Doctor in this situation. Like that just instantly made me think like, oh fuck, you're right. Like there's no good way for this to end. So the only good way for it to end is to just erase everything that happened.
Yep.
And that makes me really worried.
We'll see. We'll see if the show can actually deal with some consequences here. So.
Yeah.
For as fucking dumb as I thought the thing that they set up was, I don't want to see them like back up on it either, because that would just be make it all the worse.
Sure. Next week could bring our scores up, Stu.
Yeah, that's totally possible. It's totally possible that next Saturday's episode will be fantastic. I mean, I liked last week's episode better than I liked the week before that. You know.
Yeah. I mean, could be a really bad first hour of a good two-hour movie.
I just hope this isn't the Jon Snow moment of Doctor Who, although we've had a lot of those already.
They already killed Osgood.
Yeah, they killed Osgood there. And my prediction: she dies again at the second half of this episode.
Saving humanity.
Predictions, guys. I have to step away, unfortunately.
Right. Not a problem.
Yeah, me too. I think it's time.
Well, I'm gonna give away. I am gonna give away something right now, friends, and this is how we're gonna give it away. We will tweet out a message shortly that says, retweet, follow, and listen to the Lonely TARDIS podcast to win a Doctor Who prize pack with a link to the site and a hashtag in there. Retweet that message or tweet it out yourself for a chance to win this prize pack. Uh-huh. And I will choose one person to be the winner of a little swag pack that includes the Doctor Who graphic novel As Time Goes By, which is the 11th Doctor Series 2, Volume 4.
Ooh.
Never opened. I have a Microfig Series 3 minifigure from Doctor Who. It is in, I don't know which one it is. It's a mystery one that I grabbed from Barnes & Noble. So it's from the character building. So it is a Lego size. I also have a Doctor Who one-of-a-kind lanyard that has all three Doctors of the 50th anniversary Doctor Who lanyard to give away. And finally, a little book called The Doctor and the Daleks. I think – I don't exactly know where I got this little tiny book from, but it goes through some of the history of the Daleks. It's actually kind of cool. I think I got it also from Barnes & Noble. So these 1, 2, 3, 4 things will go to a winner.
That sounds way better than whatever an Osgood box is.
But you have to, I will send a message out shortly here, through the Lonely TARDIS account. Please retweet that message and follow Lonely TARDIS account. You'll see hashtag, Dr. Swag. That'll be hashtag Dr. Swag. So make sure you retweet and follow the Doctor Who account. And unfortunately, I can only mail this to the U.S. Because shipping it to overseas is crazy at this
point. Continental U.S. probably applies.
Continental U.S. But do not fear, we will have a contest as well for that will include our overseas friends. Probably the next time around or the time after that. Anyway, so that's it for the Lonely TARDIS. Please rate and review us on iTunes. Follow us at Lonely TARDIS, www.lonelytardis.com. You can find me at Dolly Domovsky. You can find Marcus at Annoyed Gamer. Where can we find you, Steven?
You can find me on Twitter at Stevenstrom, Stevenstrom. You can also find me on Ars Technica /gaming, which is the Opposable Thumbs channel. And you can also find me on Dorkly, where I've just written an article about Halo lore that will hopefully be up pretty quickly here, timely with that. Ooh. And if you want to learn about some Halo stories outside of the main games, you can go here and there, as well as all the other things I read about.
I used to be a Halo lore geek. I'm very excited to read that.
Oh, you nice. Like your Halo?
I did.
Yeah.
Recent one. I hear the recent one.
You're like, I liked it until you just called it Halo. Sean, where can we find you?
on this podcast each and every week. Well, each and every week, except the weeks I decide not to show up due to travel, business, or other family commitments. But you can open on Twitter at SHAUNNORTON.
And that is it for the Lonely TARDIS, gentlemen. Sing us out.
Let's see. What's the song of the Zygons?
I feel like it's there's some Zygon theme. We should be. It's just a bunch of.
Jingoism, blah blah blah. Terrorism, war on terror, blah blah. Mission accomplished.